Hi, this is Chris Parker with the Business Simplicity Podcast, and I just had a really nice conversation with Quentin Dupret, coach and facilitator, on how we met at a Dr. Joe Dispenza activity and how he's using generative collaboration and collective intelligence to work with management teams to really reach higher, much higher levels of performance. Say, hey, Quentin, why would this be really valuable for people to listen?
I think to me, these two words, collective intelligence, learn about it, instead of doing collected intelligence and the usual traditional recipes, companies learn a radical new way to bring lasting changes that lasts in your company. It's a beautiful process. People usually say it reconnects to themselves, bring much more joy in the workplace and joy for themselves. So a wonderful path for collectives and the individuals to go with.
The Business Simplicity Podcast, where we learn about strategies and tactics to succeed through simplicity, with your host, Chris Parker.
And welcome back to the Business Simplicity Podcast. This is Chris Parker, and I'm having a conversation with Quentin Dupret, and he is in Belgium. I'm based in the Netherlands, and we met about a month ago, maybe just a bit longer, in London at a course by Dr. Joe Dispenza and his in-company program, NeuroChange Solutions. And that is our moment of coming together. And we had some really interesting conversations, both of us inspired to bring this, I don't want to call it a message or this, you know, maybe this energy into the workplace to, you know, in our own ways. And we've stayed in touch, and I'm just delighted to have Quentin on for a conversation who is approaching this in some very, very creative ways, including planning some retreats into some remote areas to help boards, management teams, people from corporate organizations to connect to themselves and to obviously to increase their happiness and satisfaction. And I guess ultimately performance. Quentin, can you share with us just a little bit about how did this happen? How did you get into this space of helping executives and people on corporate management teams connect with themselves, if I'm saying that right, to perform better? How did we get there? And then we're going to unpack a lot of that and undoubtedly talk about Dr. Joe and you know, I think generative topics and I hope just really having a lot of fun with it. But what brought you here?
Well, thank you, Chris, for the question. I'm really delighted to also be here. We were just discussing before starting the podcast that it's really good to connect and to be in this space of exchanging. So let's do that. Where did these ideas come from? Actually, I was kind of on the rail until the end of my studies. I never really asked myself questions. I was just like a normal guy doing normal things and doing business management study. So my aim was to become one day a CEO and to run a company and so on and so on, until I got selected for a nice management traineeship program in Belgium. And the day before signing the contract, they said, no, hire freeze, this is a crisis, you cannot come. So I was like, okay, what will I do in my life now? And life puts on my path going to India, going to do an internship there, in social business. So it was the first time actually after 5 years of studying businesses that I learned about social businesses, because to me before there were a normal organization doing like organized and doing regular business and so on, and then NGOs, nonprofits and so on that are not organized, more hippie-like organization and disorganized. That was my world before, like separate. And then I learned about social business, which is making business with a social cause and being really efficient at doing things. So that changed my life a lot. And I was in India. India is great. It's amazing. Yes, it's a completely different culture than what I've been used to. So working with Indians was the most beautiful experience I had in my life. But it was so challenging that I had to think about who I am, how am I asking things, what am I expecting from my colleagues, how can I handle this adversity, and so. The first month there was super, super intensive, super trash, super hard, because I was, for the first time of my life, questioning myself. But I had time because I was there. I had time to overcome that. And what helped a lot is actually starting to do yoga first as a sport, because I need to do some sports. And locally, then they told me, yes, you can do it, but you need to come every day for 3 weeks for the beginner's course, which I did. And I must say, those 3 weeks changed my life radically. It was the first time I would listen to myself. I could feel, I could reflect, take some time off and see, okay, so this is happening at work, this I could start doing. And so that's where it all started. After a year there, doing yoga every day and changing a lot, I came back to Belgium and started actually that management traineeship in that company I was hired before the crisis. And working in companies there, I was like, oh my God, this is completely not what I've been expecting. Even in the books at university, they say nice things and it looks nice. And then you arrive on the work floor and there's nothing happening like in the books. People are not happy. People are disengaged. You're asking something, and it's like, oh no, or maybe, or next week, or so. Yeah, I was like, what the hell? I'm just starting to work here. It was 2010, so 13 years ago, and what is happening here? Am I gonna really spend 45 years of my life in such a work environment? So I started to dig into alternative ways of being together, and I had the chance to meet a lot of great people and organizations and trainings and do a lot of experiences. And one that was yoga was this thing that's a foundation for me to really feel inside myself and start recognizing that I have feelings and that how can I manage them better and so on. And when I came back, I got into a training and an experience around collective intelligence, sociocracy, heart of sitting in circle and really listening to each other. And there was the first time I actually could connect to others, really feel the other talking, feel his sorrow, feel his joy, feel, and I felt like, wow, I'm actually part. And for me, it was like, wow, I'm in a world of emotion. Dispenser, I would say, energy in motion, that I learned a bit later. And so that day, or after those 2 weeks, it was a 2 week training, I decided and I made that promise to myself that I would live in a world where emotion has their full place, where it's normal to have emotion and where we can do something with it. And it's an energy that we can use instead of being, like we say, that you might know that. Many people say that the body is just there to walk the head from meeting to meetings. That's what usually people would tell me and the business was. So from there, I started training in collective intelligence and all these things. And slowly, slowly, I thought, okay, if one day, how would I like to be managed and definitely in a more...
Quentin, I have a question. Was the collective intelligence training at that same company that you were doing the traineeship at? Or was it a different company?
No, a different company. So that traineeship was great because they would focus a lot on soft skills. So I had coachings and so on, but collective intelligence and 2010 was already, now it starts to become like a lot of people talk about collective intelligence. So I would call it more and more collected intelligence, because people usually say, okay, you put people in a circle and you ask them to talk about something and whoa, this is collective intelligence. No, it's just collected intelligence. Collective intelligence being really, or needing ingredients such as taking time, active listening, deep listening, connection with nature, connection with letting the unexpected happen. So a lot of things that most of companies usually don't take the time to as a setup to bring it together and to let it happen. So yes, I learned it besides in
well, I guess what an amazing gift of that traineeship to confront you so early in your career with showing you what you do not want. And then you're able to be presented somehow with a taste of what an alternative could be. And then it sound like you ran with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, really nice.
And for like 7 years, it was like, hey, we're so strange because I got quite early to discover this figures from Gallup saying about engaged people not engaged and so on. So I would witness myself saying, "Ah, no, I'm not engaged. Oh, no, I'm actively disengaged. Oh, no, I'm engaged." And actually, it was like day and night, during the day, usually not engaged or disengaged from so many parameters that would bring me to that in that state. And then in the evening, in the weekends, when I would volunteer or start my own initiatives or you know, all these things with circle practice or collective intelligence, sociocracy, that was such a great encounter too. So all the things that I would do in the weekend, yeah, would be so engaged. That would be my fuel to last and to slowly actually build my future job, because at some point I said, okay, now I have enough experience, enough network, enough, yeah, things to say. A friend of mine told me, now you have this field and it's full of, you've been nourishing it, you've planted the seeds, so now you have just to watch and let it grow. But you need time to care for it, so quit your job and jump into doing what you do good and what you love to do is bring more
and this has
at work and
converged and accumulated into your, I call it an agency of Mango Chutney. And I think people can find that, I think, at mangochutney.eu.
Yes, indeed.
And there you're facilitating, you're coaching, also training. As well as bringing people on retreats. I think traditionally, like based on what I learned, you know, in my MBA and maybe in your, you know, if you went to business school, I think you did. The traditional manager, if I look back to the, you know, from the age of management science, might not be fully open to some of these practices and methods and mindsets. Are you feeling that there's a, obviously you are because you're busy here, but have you seen a shift there or what's happening that is creating the space for you to engage and add this kind of value in the workplace?
That's actually I don't know if it's the first one that comes. It's a tricky question, but is it tricky? I don't know. Why am I saying that? Usually, and that's, I was telling that again last week at the client. People were saying, "Oh, you should have come 3 months ago." I said, "Yes, but you know, I'm." And the first sentence I wrote when I was preparing for your podcast was, "I'm a fireman for company," and usually you call the fireman when it's burning. So usually people have no choice to do something because it's burning. I come, I say, okay, if you want to extinguish the fire, we need to take some time off and to analyze it. And there actually I have a foot in the door. And from there we can then start building things and do some prevention and put all these things together that's needed in a team in order to avoid future fires. So that's one thing. And with that, I must say that it's usually not, it's, people are not really, they're asking from it, but from the wrong intention, because it's burning, they need something to solve it. And then maybe I've tried something else before, but they say, okay, now it's burning, I'm ready to do anything to make the situation go better. So I'm not really believing in your methods, maybe to put people in circle, to take time, to center yourself, all these things. But if that works, okay, please remove the pain and I'm happy. But when it's getting back to normality, then they tend to forget it. And then it comes back to the previous situation, and they're usually burning again. So sometimes they're cold again, or sometimes they try the next coach, next thing, and so on. So that's one thing. And then there are other types of leaders these days that indeed, since Lalou came out with his book, Reinventing Organization, and I was very happy actually when I was in one of those jobs where I was actively disengaged. I won't name the company, but I remember being doing some slides, like most bullshit jobs do have you do. And so I was preparing slides for a steering committee. And at that time, I was discussing with Lalou, and he did send me at that moment, say, hey, I'm going to have this book soon out. Would you like to read the PDF before and tell me what you think about it? So I was like, oh my God, this is the bomb. This is massive. This is huge. And I was in the company saying, slides, and reading this thing, the PDF, at the same time. It was That was amazing. So there are many people that have been reading about this, that have encountered, that are doing retreats these days, leadership retreats and so on. It's quite getting popular. And so sometimes, and that's actually my favorite mission, like a CEO or a manager, someone would call me and say, okay, you know, I've been reading about these things. I want to experience that for myself and for my company. And then you get carte blanche, or you can do what you want, and then you start a journey that is, and I tell them, yeah, it won't happen in 2 months or 3 months. It's changing a culture, it's a path, it's a journey, and it's a journey into the unknown. So up we go for 2, 3, 4 years sometimes. I have clients that started 7 years ago, and have customers that were started 7 years ago, and then they go forwards, and they go a bit backwards, and then a little crisis or something comes, and they go a bit forwards, and then so they're climbing slowly. It's not a it's not a straight path, but So yes, it's but I must say that since Corona, and I don't like to talk about being pessimistic, but I'm not very happy with the way my customers behave, and people in the market usually behave, so like management and teams and so on, because it's more and more less and less people. So many people are tired, are in burnouts, are sick, and they don't replace them in teams. So teams get more and more burden and workloads, and it makes actually my job almost impossible, because if you want to do, I would say, if you want to do personal development, it's kind of a luxury. You need some time, you need some stability to be able to work on yourself. It's not when you're in a crisis and managing one crisis after the other that you can do deep software or deep changes in the way you operate. And so it becomes difficult actually to do what I'm doing. And I'm actually, this year I've been more, I think, 2/3 fireman and 1/3 prevention, whereas before I would be more 2/3 prevention and 1/3 fireman. So that's the problem. And I don't know how it will evolve in the coming years.
Well, I have a very strong belief in this area where, and go with me on this, and maybe we spoke about it already in London, but what I'm understanding, and very oftentimes I'm in a leadership organization in high stress, you know, M&A integrations, massive change, restructure type of stuff. And there's the oftentimes seen in tension or conflict is business performance and call it respective people. And one of the things that I see is absolutely true is if you want the, call it business performance, the financial performance to grow of an organization, then the only way to do that in a sustainable way is for the humans in the organization also to grow themselves. And in my life experience, I'm curious if this is also true for you, that the moments when I grow as a person the most is when I'm bumping up against other humans, rubbing up against the expectations, values, judgments, beliefs, behaviors of others, and where we spend most of our life is actually in work. And so I'm just seeing some of these patterns. It's like, well, if we want business performance to grow and not only financial, just whatever impact they want to make, that has to be based on the growth of their people as humans. And that's triggered by interaction with others, in the collective. So, for me, that's an obvious and inevitable outcome, and I'm hoping that society and management thought embraces that more and more. What do you think? What's missing in those statements for you?
Nothing missing. Maybe one thing that I usually add to companies, because more and more this year I've seen actually a lot of people saying, okay, we go into environmental things and we're going to save the planet or doing that and that and that. So we're becoming sustainable. So that's the big hype now. Everybody goes sustainable and fighting carbon dioxide and everything. So it's great. But I always say, okay, for this, you need to change your business model radically. And who is going to do that? And where is the creativity and all these things? It comes from humans. Okay, AI is great. It's going to get rid of all the bullshit jobs and source life and so on. You don't need to make them anymore. And AI will do them for you. But the creative juice and all these things to change your business model towards regenerative businesses and practices needs humans. So where are they? So that's one thing. Shift business success people, but also definitely sustainability needs people for to make it an organic ways of doing it. If we design dead organizations like we do, then we get dead things, and death is not sustainable. It's not green. It's not so. We need to build an organic organization to be able to do that. Another thing that I wanted to say is that indeed you evolve by connection with other people. That's why I chose not to do individual coaching, but collective coaching, because my personal experience is indeed that I'm evolving a lot when I'm in a collective. It reflects a lot to me. It's like mirrors all around, and when it's well channeled, then it's really a huge catalyst for growth. Though what I've seen is, I was talking to you about that earlier, is that collective grow and then suddenly you go out of it and you stop coaching them or and then the growth would start to stop or come back to, because there is a crisis or something, so they come back to the original state. So to me, it's also a discussion with yourself, and that's what I loved, and I think you love too. It's the neurochange solution training we had, and the whole work from Joe Dispenza, actually, that is he's not the only one to do that, but he has put it really well into words and to a practice too. That is the thing of being in discussion or being in relationship with your thoughts and saying, okay, I'm actually, we are a lot inside. So all these thoughts, all these things that are happening, and how can I evolve? How can I get more aware of it, of what's happening inside of me and what's blocking me, preventing me from? Because all the leaders, when I'm asking them, they have this intention to do it well, to be positive with their people, to do good things, except the few the psychopaths that are on the workplace. But most of the people have a positive intention. Yes,
there's always a few nutters.
Most people have a positive intention, indeed, but how come that you have a positive intention, that you're paying, that you're doing things and so on, and still you end up with the same result? And so to me, that's why I'm going into that axis now, is collective coaching, but also individual, though I love to do individuals with the collective. So some of individuals doing their work with their colleagues too. So if you do that, the colleague can say, okay, you're like that, so I understand you better. And so you also bring... you also consolidate the group. And to me, I like this thing that Joe is always saying, that the same thoughts bring the same choices, bring the same action and behaviors, the same experience and the same feelings. And then same feelings bring the same thoughts again. And it's a chemical process. It's how we are built. And unless you become aware of it and you start changing your thoughts consciously, and there are tools to start doing it, and it's a practice. You just told me that you need a 30-day practice to change that, and that's wonderful. That's what I'm also doing a lot every day, is really thinking, okay, how do I want to think, and how can I do difference? And slowly, day by day, doing that, plus putting this framework for better collaboration and so on. To me, that's the key for success, and that's where I'm going to put more energy in the coming months. And that's why also I started Quantum Retreats, to have people to take time to reflect and out of their everyday life to do the job, and then come back and do the little homework to sustain it.
What I really appreciate about what I'm hearing and feeling from you is that you are on your own personal journey as well, meaning you've gone to an in-person Dr. Joe retreat, I think in February you said, a progressive, which is one of the 3 days.
And in June.
And in June as well, that's right. And were you in Cancun in June?
Yes.
Okay. I was there as well. We didn't meet there. We met afterwards.
Yeah, cool.
And then you followed up in with the NCS training, the NeuroChange Solutions, and that's specifically the in-company training. And for me, I think I think that's a perfect mix. Meaning if you go deep Dr. Joe for personal work, you know, connecting to the quantum and the universe with, you know, through that work and the breath work and the meditation work. And there's this more intellectual, rational framework that NCS brings that you just described, you know, like, and for me, it was almost like I want to work in a company that it's mandatory to take the NCS course before you can start, for example. Because essentially, it's giving you the realization, which is daunting, to stop being a victim. You know, your experiences in life and the emotional responses you have are absolutely and totally and utterly up to you. And I thought I was pretty well underway after, you know, a couple Dr. Joe events and pretty consistent with the meditations and the breathing. But this 30-day mental rehearsal program that we did after the NCS workshop, fuck, that got deep. You know, it's like I'm sorry, but it's just because basically what you have to do in the morning, you know, you wake up in the morning and you think about, well, what are the thoughts that are immediately coming to your mind? And just that conscious awareness and having to scribe it out and confront yourself with what are these thoughts that are invading your head based on habit, and then making a conscious discussion. I'm looking at my little booklet here, like what do you no longer want to think, and then what do you want to think? Because if your thoughts you know drive your beliefs, and your beliefs drive your actions, and your actions, you know, the experiences and experiences, the emotions, you know, that whole cycle goes and goes. Honestly, this month has been rough. You know, there's been some sleepless nights, because once you become aware of what's going on in your brain and how addicted your brain is to that funk. So hats off to you for doing the work and then bringing it into organizations.
But also, it's difficult nights and difficult moments to witness that, but it's also so many great moments where you say, okay, this is now the new thought, and you start infusing it, and you have this rehearsal exercises to really start rewiring your brain and rewiring, and it brings so much joy, so much thing. I must say, it's not changing.
And it's indeed. Thank you for completing the story.
It's not only this. You're destroying the old, and it's not always nice. But so what you can put and rewrite the story after is so beautiful.
And maybe let me share. I'm not sure if some of the patterns and things that, you know, and I'm also a Esther Hicks fanatic. So I bring in some of that energy as well, but the statement, and I want to get into play box, think box as well before we wrap up. But what I keep coming back to is some sort of version of the absolute certainty and knowledge that things are always working out for me and everyone in unknown ways that surprise and delight me. you know, it's every major event in my life, I never really could have anticipated how it happened, but in the moments that have been maybe the most dark, when you look back, are typically always setting up for something, and it always works out in the end. You know, of course, eventually we're going to die, you know, so that, you know, but that's also a way of working out in the end. And I hope to be very well prepared for that. But with that knowledge, you know, that thought, I can confront difficulty, things that normally would have really stressed me out, would have, you know, got my cortisol going, get all this chemical poison going on in my body. I can be uncomfortable, but also with just the absolute knowledge that this is a moment. This is a moment now, and the next moment will be another moment. And it's been, you know, to go deep into that has been an absolute, absolute gift. And I would really recommend anyone can, you know, get a Dr. Joe book, call Quentin as well. By the way,
little disclaimer, we don't have any share from Dr. Joe. We don't get any commission from, because everybody says since a year now that I've been into the work, and everybody says, yeah, but are you paid? Do you get a commission or something? Because at every dinner, everywhere I go is, how are you, Dr. Joe? How are you, Dr. Joe? What have you done today, Dr. Joe?
Well,
it's tremendous.
This I don't know, it might sound confronting, but Dr. Joe, if you're listening, I was about to say I apologize, yeah, but I don't. It's not done. Meaning Dr. Joe is standing on the shoulders of giants, and he has packaged this in a very obvious, consumable way that obviously people are attracted to. And it's not done. Meaning, you know, there's going to be another generation. There's going to be the Quentin DePretz of the world that take that and take it a step further and impact humanity even more. So thank you, Dr. Joe, for everything you're doing, and Quentin for, you know, continuing that work, because it's
and
never
Chris.
Ever done. And Chris, yeah, and Chris.
Thank you, and thank you to all the one that are listening and that are doing this introspective work of every day, connecting more and more to what is inside of them and the love. Because I remember Joe saying there is always more love. You think you're there, and then the next day you feel more and more and more, and he's been doing the work for so many years, and so me it's the same in 1 year. So I would add into this the thing that you always think, indeed there is always the good thing coming in the storm. And to me, I remember a few days ago I was a bit ill, and I was kind of shivering in my bed, and I was still feeling the love and the thing. I'm like, yeah, you know, it's storm, but under it's wow. It's like when it's dark sky, but you fly up and it's always sunny. So under, or you know, there is always the sun shining, and it's always there. We just have to dig a little bit and to practice a little bit. It's not even so much, but it's a little bit of practice to get there. So thank you for all, because that's how the world is changing.
Yeah, and that's exactly how the world is changing. And it's a little bit of practice, and it's just a practice to just overcome your unconscious default reaction to stuff, and just have that brief moment, you know, when your mind is you know, about to go into fight, flight, or freeze, and it's going to do that anyways, but then recover from that, or they call it that refraction time, or, you know, to self-regulate and go, ooh, oh, I'm okay. You know, this is just a moment. So,
all is good. Yeah.
All is good. It's always working out. Can we unpack a little bit, think box, play box.
Yes. Think box, play box. It's actually, I practiced from this panda that was very inspiring to me, and actually that was reflecting or mirroring a practice that I have. He always says, before my meditation, I visualize what I want, how I want it, what I want to achieve, what I want to visualize, what thoughts I want to know, and then I get into it, and then I just let it go, and I see what life is bringing to me. So that's the play box. And when he said that, I said, yes, indeed, because your podcast is also about simplicity, and my motto in everything I do is from Leonardo da Vinci, is simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. So it's really important for me to bring simple things, and simplicity is not something you achieve, it's complex. So how do I bring simple things to companies? Because sometimes I tell my partner, oh, I've been doing that today. And say, oh, you're paid to do that? And say, yeah, I mean, but it's so simple. Yeah, but people don't think about it. They don't have time to do that. So how we do it? Think box is very important. I always project myself into, okay, this is the group. That's what they have to achieve. That's the situation. I'm trying to have the good setup. What kind of room? Do they need to sit in a circle? Do we need to start by there? Or is that or that? So it's actually doing the work, rehearsing, mental rehearsing before it's happening. And trying to sense how people would react, what they would feel, to really bring this container, safe container for when I'm there, that people can feel confident and safe really fast to unfold what they have to say and bring the best version of themselves individually and collectively. Yet when you arrive there, so when I arrive there, I get into, so my think box is, okay, I know it's gonna work fine. So if I stay back, if I stay my head in my think box, it won't work. So usually it's everything aside. So I'm starting and then I'm jumping into the play box, and the play box is actually being in the flow, being connected to the group, reading the energy of the group. Know more and more, you might know from Socratic this thing about taking decision with thumbs. Know more and more, I'm having groups taking decisions with saying, okay, so that person just made that proposal. How does that feel when the proposal was made? Do you feel joy? Do you feel something positive? Or do you feel something a little bit more, yeah, not positive? And that is a way to be in the play box, to really be in the flow, to sense, okay, so this is said, but maybe there is something under it, underlying. So it's really playing with life and letting go and see what is happening. And I really love to play in that box, and to actually be in both boxes. So when I'm giving trainings, because I've been giving trainings in the past, not this, in the last years, but to people doing my job now, and that's really two different competencies that for me are important to guide the group well, is think ahead and do a good design. A good design is already a lot of the intervention, and then let go fully and see what is happening and be in the present moment and sense, and it will be perfect. That's what I'm repeating to companies. And yeah, it seems easy, it seems simple when it's said, but it's a practice that you need to practice and take time. So companies, please, if you listen, if you, there's a manager sitting here and you want to bring really lasting change in a team, it's not about having you pay 10 days instead of 5 days of a coach. No, it's not about that at all, because I always say, for me, the lesser I'm there, the better for you. But you need to take the time, and you need to, yes, invest. And it's not only about money; it's investing time and energy and thing to change the way you do it. And I think we had the discussion too. It's this huge trend about agility and agile and Scrum and all these things. It's beautiful, but I get all the Scrum masters and the agile people coming to the kind of trainings I'm giving, saying, okay, it doesn't work. And why it doesn't work in our job? I don't know if I told you about this acronym. In English, it's the FHF. It's sorry for the world, fucking human factor. So it's always the human factor that is... Mm-hmm. That is, yeah, you can put a lot of processes and sociocracy is good for that, holacracy is great for that, so, and lots of processes that you can find on the web and apply. But if you don't take human and human is emotions, feelings, the strange things, the chemistry, and so on that we discussed a bit before, if you don't take that into account and know how to change it in a lasting way, it's, you will always get back to where you were before, and yes, that's how companies spend millions on transformation programs. And I don't remember the statistics, but I think lately I read 2/3 of transformation plans are failure. And usually people then say, yeah, but I rented the best consulting, and yeah, if you didn't fail, it's not my fault. It's the consulting. So most consulting, big consulting firms are I would love to train them to get them into the human side of the way of
well, I
bring
I have some strong
transformations.
Opinions about why transformations fail. I think a lot of it's just due to lazy leadership versus what I call love leadership, meaning it's also sometimes it's just so lazy to hire a consultant to make your strategy for you and then make an implementation plan and expect them to execute. I'm sorry, that's not love. That's not intimacy. That's not showing up. And usually the transformation that needs to happen first is with the executives. You know, so if you're going to do a cultural transformation and assume the C-suite isn't going to be turned upside down by that, of course it's going to fail. McKinsey and Accenture they're not magicians. You know, like if you don't check in yourself, it's not going to work. And so, I would say that, that 2/3 or 80% of transformations fails because it didn't have a chance from the beginning. And related to that, I think probably half of that 2/3 are failing because it probably doesn't make sense. You know, you didn't consult the people at the shop floor that know the actual solution. So you came in with some other, okay, let's do a system change. Like what? Let's do a reorganization. What? No, this. What?
I would say.
Yeah.
There are three types of power: power on people, and still some organization leaders do have power on people, and it's like all types. I don't encounter many, but there are still. And then power for people, that's the usual traditional organization. So managers do it for the people, for the culture, for the things, but they decide and they don't consult. And then for me, the best management and the best power is power with, to do with the people. Doesn't mean that you have, because that's one of the things too, that may, if you want to make sure that your transformation towards participatory, more horizontal structure and more participative way will fail, is to forget the horizontal verticality. Doesn't mean when you share your power, you're sharing it. You're not giving it away. You are still the leader. You're still expected to be the captain of the boat. Not saying that's where we go. You can decide it collectively and have a sense it collectively, but you should spend time, more time than people on doing the job, feeling and sensing into what is needed. And because I see so many leaders that have an agenda that is more full with operational stuff than operational people, which is for me a huge error, because they expected to. The most inspiring leader for me was a guy that I heard from South of France. I heard one of his management team, a member of his management team, and he was telling me, this guy is taking us to silent retreats every year, like at least for a week, just to the purpose of that week. We don't speak during the day and then we speak in the evening. And the purpose of that week is just to stand, what is the next move, what the company wants to say, what it feels, what is the deep sensing of the... So it's a bit crazy, maybe. How can you listen to a company by just not listening? But yeah, it's just about, okay, what is the next move? Where do we need to go? What is right? And not only in terms of profit, but I like the thing of what is good for the seventh generation to come. And how can we act as a company? So that's one of my actually...
We've been going way too long, but you just talked about this deep sensing. So in the spirit of playfulness and there are no rules on this podcast, I think I'd like the last topic to be, and you've expressed how in some of these workshops that you facilitate, these moments, these collective connected moments, that you seek to find ways for people to, I think you call them like the shiver moments, you know, the moments when something happens that it really touches or triggers someone authentically and deeply. Let's hold that in our conversation for a bit before we wrap up. What is that shiver moment and why is that important? And is that even a goal, or is that, because for me, it I don't think you can, force engagement. You can't force people to care. No. But if you have a shared promise, like if you come, you're coming together, you're saying, hey, we're going to, we're going to spend some life energy together to create something together. We're going to spend time together. We're going to get to know each other. We're going to grow together. When that clicks, that's amazingly powerful. And my feeling is you help people make that click.
It's a great way to, I could change my elevator pitch for the next time, saying, okay, I'm helping people to have that click, this aha moment, this thing. And that's actually, for me, true collective intelligence. It's when you have this thing, and I've been having these moments in my life so many times in before I started doing the job, and that was actually a trigger to do that job. When you are coming to a meeting and you know there are so many important decisions to be taken, and you have no clue how you will get out of it because there is a conflict and people in two opposite camps and so on, and suddenly there is this thing of deep listening, of okay, suddenly there are less and less talking sticks with since the corona, because people don't want to hold something and to share it. But usually I love this practice of having a tour and holding a stick and giving the talking stick and really sensing deeply, am I talking from the heart here or talking from the head, and what does my heart has to say spontaneously if I'm not pre-thinking things, and does it serve me? Does it serve the group? Does it serve the higher than the group? So all these things, that's when you take the time and you have the right setup. Suddenly you have this thing like, wow, the solution is coming. It's so beautiful. So that's one thing that I could experience a lot. And then lately, it's 2019, 18 or something, I got to train. And I'm using that a lot as a tool for companies, because it's really groundbreaking. It's called generative collaboration and generative coaching, if it's more for individuals. And generative collaboration, it's from Robert Diels and Gilligan, so the guys that were also behind NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. And they came up with basically same kind of principles as Joe Dispenza, saying get out of your body, so get out of your ego, mental stuff, etc. So he has a technique to bring people quite quickly into this thing where you are more like a channel toward to, and you're able to sense, to tap into what they call the information field, the quantum fields, the field around the stuff where a lot of information is basically there, and it's all about frequencies, etc. We won't go into too much into details here. But there, when I bring groups into that state and I ask them, okay, now we're going to connect to, for instance, the purpose of the organization, what is its vision or mission? And then I ask them, okay, what is the movement that comes when you connect, and when you ask, okay, what is the mission? Then I let them have a movement, and the movement starts to arise in someone's hands and arms, and then someone would get into the movement again, and suddenly the whole group is doing the movements. And usually that's where it stops, or where it could stop, because people are, goosebumps. Yeah, the goosebumps is shivering. It's there. It's like, wow, this is it. It's an energy. It's something that when you feel it, you just, people are smiling. People sometimes cry from not sorrow, but from like, it's powerful. It's like, yes, we have it. Though we need to get back into this three dimensions. So people, in the end of the workshop, they still want to have this thing printed on the wall and vision, mission, values, and so on, if you are working on that, for instance. And so I ask them after that, what are the images, the metaphors, what are the things that come up to your mind when you're, and to your heart when you are doing the movements? And then after that, words to make a sentence. And but it's another way than the 2 days or 3 days workshops where you put a C-suite in a little farm greenery to think about where we go, etc. There you can do it in 2 hours. So it's super efficient. I love efficient things, because I'm basically very lazy. If I can do something quicker and better, then I will do it. Because life is not about work, it's about enjoyment and discoveries and experiences. So if we can spend less time at work or more time for good designs, thinking box and play box after that, than doing the usual things, and then it's great. And teams are usually really, really like they say, did we produce that in 2 hours? And it sounds so true. So wow, I would never expect that. That's what I love. It's when people say, I would have never expected that. As I was telling you just before, tomorrow, because it's my birthday today, so it's time of my life in the year when I'm doing this thing of where I'm going for the next year. And so tomorrow I've planned some time to do this exercise I was just describing. What does my soul want for next year? And I have no clue at the moment. I'm like empty space, and I'm sure I can share it to you tomorrow, maybe tomorrow night. I'll tell you and send you an email saying, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I can't tell you anything from I have no idea. I know I want to go maybe more into retreats and these things, but maybe it will tell something completely different, and it will be perfect, and it will be yeah, I'm sure I'll be impressed by it. It sounds right, and
please send me the email, and I'm curious what emerges. We talked about that before we started, you know, started recording, but the gift you're giving yourself to just very openly, without determination, you know, just allowing your ambition intention for next year to emerge, which also what one sets the intention for the future, but it's also, it's not carrying the baggage, just the default repeat, you know, rinse and repeat from the past. And that what an amazing life that creates. So you're not just, you know, blindly repeating your, but going into that vision mission process, what I like about it is the simplicity, and I hadn't thought of it like that before, but typically organizations, they do all the wordsmithing, and then they want to make a poster. And so they figure out what do the graphics look like, and they pray that there's some emotional response to it, which of course there never is. Sounds like you flip that. You say, let's connect, check into the emotion, and then allow the imagery, the visual, to emerge, and then find the words. And it seems to be, yeah, very obviously naturally opposite.
It's super powerful, though I'm still stuck with it, because people, when you know, when it's too simple, then people are like, yeah, and maybe, you know, I didn't suffer enough for it, and all. So it's still there. Instead of 2 days, you have it in 2 hours. It's super right, it's super nice, it's really making it resonates in people. But then you come back a month later, 2 months later, it's forgotten, it's still on the wall, and people don't look at it anymore, then don't make it alive. They, although I would tell them, before taking a decision that is really important, look at it, do the movement again, get back into that energy, and see, does the decision we're trying to make or to take match the energy of you know, who we are, and is there a vibrational match and so on. But that's a bit too far away from where people are now, what I was describing with since Corona, crisis after crisis after crisis, and more people sick and less people in the on the workplace. And so people say, okay, we don't have time for that now. And so a lot of great tools, but it takes time and yeah, so a bit frustrated in that, but I'm sure.
Well, it
lots
will emerge, but I also say when people,
yeah,
when those management teams are making significant choices, then what is the consequence of not doing the work, of not taking an hour to either they're on their own or call you back in and check to that deep emotional intent? And should we make that acquisition or not? You know, like, you know, just built that into the investment process, you know. Just to say, you know, hey, you know, if there's anything above this level of risk or potential impact on the organization, then do we all commit to each other to, I'm sorry, take an hour of peace before you make a major decision?
That would be great.
It's kind of silly.
That would
not,
be amazing.
It's kind of silly not to promise yourself that. So we've gone way too long, but it's been lovely. Quentin Depret. You can find Quentin online at LinkedIn. All the links will be on the show notes. So if you're listening to this anywhere or watching it, you can click through and find him there. But it's LinkedIn at Quentin Depret, or mangochutney.eu. I think those are the two best places. He's also kindly given his email address that will be on the show notes. So if you want to reach out to him directly, then feel free just to skip all the websites and go straight to the source. So Quentin, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to that email tomorrow, see what emerges. And
looking forward to, and
delighted to stay connected and either as a participant or as a co-facilitator. I can imagine, you know, some of my programs bringing you into that stuff. I'd be delighted to stay in touch.
That would be lovely. And I hope we'll see each other at the NCF training next year.
Thank you for listening. Visit ebullient.com to download the Simple Business Design Framework. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast on your favorite player.